Today's podcast is brought to you by Balance 7. Save $10 plus free shipping this week only with code HOWIE10 at balance7.com. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Hello, New England. Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. Having a fun day here. Excited for our guest, Carol Markowitz, at 1:30. And until then, we have so much to get to that actually does involve a little bit about what she's writing about. Now, kids have been impacted, to say the least, by this pandemic, as we all have, but I think kids in particular have really been cast aside. They're the last ones who aren't really welcome in polite society. Bill de Blasio constructs policies to only allow vaccinated people into buildings when kids at the time weren't even approved to be vaccinated. And then his administration explains that they just kind of forgot, you know, and that kind of sums up how all of these politicians have treated kids over the past 2 years. Now, what ended up happening, and we talk about this frequently on the show, but I just want to kind of recap here, is that whether it was due to watching their kids learn on Zoom or go to school in masks or come home and talk about critical race theory, parents across this country have mobilized and started speaking out. And there was a lot of viral videos of parents at school board meetings. And this really upset the left because they realized that this was not good for their poll numbers, for their candidates. They did not want parents speaking out and being unafraid. So what happened next was that the National School Board Association came out with a letter. Now, that was what we first thought. We thought, oh, they came out with this letter where they begged the DOJ to please investigate these parents. They used words like domestic terrorism. They were trying to, and I'm paraphrasing, but they were trying to label these parents as violent threats because of things like intimidation or whatever. And they referenced a few specific situations. Now, it came out recently that the National School Boards Association didn't contact all of its members, really. They didn't have the members weigh in on whether or not they should do this. What they did do, though, was they went to the White House. And they worked with the White House on coming up with this beautiful letter. And somehow, voila, it makes its way via the snail mail to Merrick Garland. And he decides he will sick the FBI onto parents who intimidate school board officials, whatever that means. Intimidation, like emergencies, like everything else today, is in the eye of the beholder. So, you know, I don't know if Dave Chappelle's comedy special is considered intimidating, if you disagree with it. A certain Halloween costume that's too gender specific, that could be intimidating. So when a parent gets up at a school board meeting and embarrasses the officials, of course, that could be considered intimidating. And they didn't specify anything about it. But something very interesting happened over the last week, because when Merrick Garland first came in to talk about this, he was weak on it. He didn't know really what to say. He claimed that he had heard about it through the letter that was sent to him and also through the newspaper, a classic Obama tactic, which makes sense why Obama was such a fan of his. He just said, oh, yeah, I read it, too. I read it in the newspaper, like all of the rest of you. And that was his reasoning to sick the FBI on these parents. Really thorough and well thought out. And so his first testimony was embarrassing in itself. And it showed that he really didn't know what he was talking about. And Jim Jordan did not, the congressman from Ohio, would not let up on him. And he just kept hammering home this idea that this was BS. And that this was so political, and this was meant to intimidate and silence parents who had finally decided enough is enough. I'm going to stand up for my kids. But this is where it gets really good. And I didn't expect to do a segment on this today, but this testimony is just too embarrassing for Merrick Garland and the entire Biden administration not to play. This is where it gets really good. The National School Board Association has apologized for the letter. I think they got a lot of grief from the separate associations within their association and you know, higher up people who said, hey, you never asked me if I wanted to be part of this. So they apologized. They backed down. And so now the question is, if they're not even sure that they should have sent the letter, if they're this willing to apologize a week or two after it gets sent out, why on earth would Merrick Garland give the A-OK to the DOJ to start looking into parents based off some flimsy letter that the National School Board Association now regrets sending out? And that is where we get Tom Cotton to come in and a few other senators come in and they start asking the good questions. Jared, I'm going to let you play whichever one you think should start us off.
We received a letter from the National Association of School Boards.
This is Ben Sasse coming up.
You didn't receive an anonymous letter. White House political staff co-wrote it with this organization, which is why the organization has rejected it. You know these facts now to be true, and yet you still won't disavow your memo. Why? You didn't receive some objective, neutral letter because all these people were being threatened. You are responding to a political campaign to politicize the Department of Justice. How big is the threat that American parents pose right now? When you lead a big organization, you have 100,000 plus employees. You have a lot of violence to go after. Are parents at school boards one of the top three concerns you face right now?
Of course not, but politically, definitely in the top three.
Somebody get Nancy Pelosi. There's been an actual murder on the floor.
It's embarrassing. He can't come up with anything. He makes Anthony Blinken look prepared and look like a really good public speaker. The fear in his eyes is pretty amazing, but no one handled him quite like the right-wing fringe tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist Senator Tom Cotton. This is Cut 31.
You keep citing news reports, and that's the most prominent news report that anyone in America has seen. That refers to Scott Smith, whose 15-year-old daughter was raped. She was raped in a bathroom by a boy wearing girls' clothes, and the Loudoun County School Board covered it up because it would have interfered with their transgendered policy during Pride Month. And that man, Scott Smith, because he went to a school board and tried to defend his daughter's rights, was condemned internationally. Do you apologize to Scott Smith and his 15-year-old daughter, Judge?
Senator, anyone whose child was raped is the most horrific crime I can imagine and is certainly entitled and protected by the First Amendment to protest to their school board about that.
But he was cited by the School Board Association
as a domestic terrorist,
which we now know that letter and those reports were the basis for your
judgment. No, Senator.
This is
that's wrong.
Shameful. Judge,
that's,
this is shameful. This testimony, your directive, your performance is shameful.
Okay. That's not correct.
Thank God you are not on the Supreme Court. You should resign in disgrace, Judge.
Yeah, he took the words right out of my mouth. That's what we're all thinking when we see him up there fumbling around. We think, thank God you're not on the Supreme Court. And I feel like we would have the same idea if Joe Biden weren't president and he got up one day and made a speech, you know, endorsing some candidate. We go, oh, thank God he's not president. Unfortunately, in this alternate universe in which we live, he is president. But Merrick Garland couldn't even defend himself. And here's where it gets tricky, is they're all lying so much. Like, they're all so vague about the details, and they're all lying so much about who knew what and when I knew what. And that's whatever. You know they're going to do that. But it's a beautiful thing to see someone like Tom Cotton, who's actually smart, dismantle their lies. Because even though they don't remember all the lies they're spewing, oh, I read about it here, I saw it here, it was an anonymous source, Tom Cotton remembers it all. The parents who are going to these meetings are watching this. They want to paint so many of us as dumb, credulous boomer rubes. And it couldn't be further from the truth. Forget the best and the brightest. I consider Tom Cotton right-wing conspiracy nut who broke the Wuhan lab leak theory wide open. He's one of the best and brightest, in my opinion. Now, what I want to talk about, though, is this desire to politicize anything they can and to vilify anyone they can who stands in the way of their agenda is really what's defining the left right now. And I was just talking in the last segment about Terry McAuliffe and how he was lying over and over and over again about how many kids in Virginia were in ICU beds due to COVID. This was not one time or two times. This was like four or five times until Glenn Kessler finally had to build up the courage and write a piece on it. And I just want to play one quote because we actually found the exact lie. This is cut 32.
Here in Virginia, 1,142 of our children have been in ICU beds in our hospitals. Last week, two 11-year-olds died from COVID.
Just more lies, and they don't care because they never get called out. But the tide is turning, and I think that these performances by people like Merrick Garland, who cannot come up with anything, and Terry McAuliffe, and how they melt down. Terry McAuliffe walked away offset from an interview when asked a question. They have nothing to stand on. As Barack Obama said, if your ideas are so great, why don't you just let people vote? That's how I'm feeling right now. If your ideas are so great, why are you trying to, why are you, first of all, lying about how many kids are in an ICU? And second of all, this one's more to Merrick Garland, why are you trying to intimidate parents from going to school board meetings? Why are you trying to chill the conversation in this country? It's because you know your ideas are terrible. When we get back, I am finally going to play the sound of this father from Florida. This is such a sad story. His daughter has Down syndrome, and she went to school, and she came back with a mask tied across her head, like across her mouth, but it was tied on the back of her head, and the school forgot to take it off before they sent her home with it because the parents had no idea she was even wearing a mask. And they are planning on taking legal action. And we're going to talk about that when we return. No one could have ever predicted how hot and competitive the real estate market would get during COVID. That is absolutely true. I remember I was right on the fence of buying, and I'm happy I did because it skyrocketed after. If you've hesitated selling your commercial or residential real estate during this time and you kind of feel like you missed the boat, well, you didn't. So don't miss your opportunity to get out on top. Let JJ Manning Auctioneers help you auction your real estate quickly, contingency-free, and for strong dollars. You will set the terms, you will set the closing date, and the buyer will pay the commissions. For over 45 years and 16,000 auctions, JJ Manning has been the trusted leader in accelerated real estate sales. To learn more on how to get your residential, commercial, or land property sold quickly and contingency-free, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or go to jjmanning.com. With over 16,000 sales and satisfied clients, you can be the next one. Again, that's Charlie at 800-521-0111 or go to jjmanning.com and get your property sold. We'll be back with more. This is The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. Grace Curley. She's here for the love.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. This is a story from The Federalist. Sophia Steele, a 7-year-old special needs student with Down syndrome who attends Brevard Public Schools in Florida, recently came home from school short of breath and with a mask tied to her head and neck with a nylon rope. Her mask was saturated with her own saliva. Now, I want to play some of the sound we have here from Sophia's father, Dr. Jeffrey Steele. He explains that Sophia is a nonverbal special needs student. She has an oversized tongue and sensory issues. He believed that she was exempt from the mask mandate. Let's play these in order, Jared, so you let me know where we're going to start.
The mask was quite tight on her face, which was, of course, obstructing her ability to speak and her ability to breathe.
Yeah, and this is not the first time that we've seen this happen. I've seen videos of in New York daycares where they're so happy to do it, too. Like, they just keep putting it over the kids' faces. We also saw the video of the young boy on a plane who was having an asthma attack. So this is not the first thing. the first time we've seen this, but the reason this stood out to me was because the father says that medically this could have been really dangerous.
When this child got off the bus and had the mask, it was tied around the back of her head underneath her ponytail, and it was quite tight around her face.
Let's play the next one.
Why in the world, since the mandate happened back in September, and you were going to begin to put this on my child, and now then tie it on my child, would you never pick up the phone and call me and ask me to give me my informed consent, which never happened, which legislation and the IEP requirements require them to do, and they did not follow that.
Now, this father is very upset, and he's not the only parent right now across this country that is speaking up on behalf of their children for a variety of reasons. In fact, we heard in that last cut that Tom Cotton, when he was talking to AG Merrick Garland, he kept referring to Loudoun County. I've spoken a lot about the issue that happened there, the horrible, horrible story of a young woman who was raped in her school bathroom by a boy who was wearing a skirt. It's pretty much been confirmed now by the judge that that is what happened. The father went to a school board meeting to refute or to make a case against the transgender policies because he had witnessed what horror can come out of it. And he ended up getting in a violent fight there and then became, like Tom Cotton said, internationally ridiculed for being this like pot-bellied redneck who was mad about a transgender policy, when really, if you knew his story, this was a father who was heartbroken that his daughter was subjected to this terrible, terrible abuse at her school. Now, this is getting a lot of pushback in Loudoun County. Finally, after months and months of this school just trying to silence the entire conversation, I wanted to play a Loudoun County parent who's calling on the school board to resign. Cut 13, please, Jared.
I'm a Loudoun parent with kids in this school system, and I'm here to expose further cover-ups, which just keep adding up. Pay attention, media. There's word now of yet another high school predator that's been transferred from Dominion to Woodgrove after he attacked a teacher. We have daughters at Woodgrove. There's also word of a Freedom High School teacher who's been transferred to Belmont Ridge 3 weeks ago after sexual impropriety with a student. It's been learned 5 years ago there was yet another sexual assault on a freshman girl at Tuscarora High School, which some on this board covered up. Scott, why are you so close to the Commonwealth Attorney? It seems like our kids are being used as pawns in some social reform game. Scott, why did you have a private, non-foyable meeting with the Commonwealth Attorney on October 15th at that fundraiser that you and I both attended? We witnessed it. Why am I still waiting on the page that was missing from the FOIA results on how you plan to spend the $11 million tied to your masking and testing mandates? Resign tonight, all of you, and end the mockery you've all brought in this great county.
He continued, and I think this plays into the critical race theory aspect of it. Cut 14. Oh, this is a different parent. Cut 14.
First, it was in early spring of 2020 when my six-year-old somberly came to me and asked me if she was born evil because she was a white person, something she learned in a history lesson at school. Then you kept the schools closed for a year and a half despite the science indicating that it was safe for kids to return. And now you've covered up a rape, then arrested, humiliated, and falsely accused her parents of being domestic terrorists. I wish I could return my kids to LCPS. Private school's expensive, and I want my kids to be able to walk home from school with their friends in their own community. I refuse to allow you to destroy our schools. They are not your schools. They are our schools. You all should be ashamed, and you should have the moral courage to admit you are wrong and step down.
Yeah, and I think that the father of that young woman who was raped must be, while I don't think he's that they're ever going to feel okay after what happened to them as a family, I think he must be relieved a little bit that people are catching on to this and that people are speaking out on his behalf. And he, not just the parents, listen to the students outside Loudoun County Schools. Cut 12. Loudoun County protects rapists, is what they were saying. All right, when we get back, we'll be talking to Carol Markowitz about children having to get vaccinated. I think you're going to want to hear this. Don't go anywhere. This is The Grease Crew.
Look.
live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. All right, we're getting a few texts from people without power here in New England. And I know it was a tough night for a lot of places, especially around Scituate, Marshfield, places on the water. A lot of people are without power. So hang in there. Stay safe. And we're pulling for you. I know it's brutal out there in some places. The trees are, there's so many places right now where it's hard to get from one place to another. So we're thinking of you. Now, last night I got an alert on my phone that the FDA has approved vaccines for kids from ages 5 through 11. And I immediately thought to myself, all right, now things are about to get very heated, because I am of the firm belief that people will take on a lot as far as themselves are concerned. They will, you know, make a sacrifice. They'll take one for the team, as Bill Maher put it. They'll say, you know what, I'll get the vaccine, whatever. You know, I don't want to lose my job. I got to feed my kids. But people draw a line when it comes to their kids. And that's a good thing. That's how parents should be. Now, joining me now, someone who has been following the treatment of children in our society, specifically during the last 2 years of this pandemic, is Carol Markowitz. She writes for the New York Post, for Newsweek. For Carol, who do you not write for? You write for everybody, every outlet out there.
Hi, Grace. Thanks so much for having me. You know, I write a bunch of places. I try to be as many places as I can be.
Yes, and you do a fabulous job. And Carol, what I want to start with here is this piece in Newsweek. You write, will kids be forced to get a COVID vaccine? And you specifically mentioned Governor Gavin Newsom. Now, I had followed when Newsom announced that, you know, he was going to be, it's like ever since he didn't get kicked out, he has this new joie de vivre, and he's going crazy. And so he came out to an elementary school and said, listen, we're going to be the first state to mandate the COVID vaccine. But you actually informed me of a fun fact about his own daughter that I did not know.
That she is 12 years old and has already been, it's been possible to vaccinate her for a while now, and she is not vaccinated. And the governor says it's because she needs to get a series of other vaccines first, and I really don't know what those vaccines can be. Plus, there's no information on the fact that you can't get the COVID vaccine with other vaccines. There's no such rule. Some people have pointed out to me that in the COVID vaccine packaging, they say, literally, we have no information for you about how this works with other vaccines. So I really don't know what he's talking about. And it's been a while, so she should have gotten vaccinated already. And it's yet another case from the governor of do as I say, not as I do, because, as you know, I've loved to point out, he has been one of the bigger hypocrites about telling people to take all kinds of restrictions during the COVID era and not doing it himself.
Yeah, and there was a moment I remember where one of his kids was caught at a camp without a mask on, and he came out and played the victim and said, you know, leave my kids out of this. But there's always been this sense that it's rules for thee and not for me. And I think a lot of parents maybe would have bitten their tongue when it was about masks or about social distancing. But when it's about injecting your kids with something that you might not understand why they need, do you think that's going to change it for people?
Well, so it's tough, because I think I'm already hearing from parents who are saying, like, I really don't want to do this, but I also can't move, and I think my school's going to mandate it, or my school has already announced that they're mandating it in some cases. So I get that parents are in sort of a tough situation here. But the thing is that kids, I have not seen any evidence that kids need this vaccine. I hate the idea that I could possibly be portrayed as anti-vax. I'm very pro-vax. I'm for the COVID vaccine, if that's a thing. I got it. I had my mother and my in-laws get it as soon as it came out. I think that most grown-ups should talk to their doctor and consider getting vaccinated. But for kids, they have such a low risk already of COVID that I don't see the point of it. And because we've gotten past the point where we imagine, scientists say that we no longer are aiming for herd immunity, because it's just not possible with the COVID vaccines. And this is in the New York Times. This is not like in, you know, some right-wing paper somewhere. New York Times quoted scientists saying herd immunity is out of reach. So I don't understand the point of vaccinating people who are not susceptible to the COVID virus.
Yeah, and you reference a study that I think really highlights the unnecessaryness of this vaccine for kids. And it's about unvaccinated kids versus fully vaccinated adults. Can you explain that to my listeners?
Yeah. So at first, a lot of the studies were highlighting that unvaccinated kids have the same risk as older vaccinated adults, which is pretty still pretty slim. But then a study out of Britain showed that actually unvaccinated kids have the same risk as any age vaccinated adult. Kids are just, and this is, you know, a blessing. This is we should all be thankful and grateful for this. The kids have largely avoided the trauma and the devastation of COVID. They have not largely died of it. They have not had high hospitalizations over it. Listen, it happens. It happens. But more kids die of the flu every year, and we don't mandate the flu vaccine in schools. We don't mandate the flu vaccine anywhere. So the idea that we should be doing this now with a virus that affects kids in smaller numbers than the flu does is just preposterous to me. And the thing is, if facts change, I'm not crazy. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'll be willing to reconsider my stance on this. But so far, I'm not giving my three small children the vaccine because they simply don't need it. It's not that I don't believe it's safe. It's not that I don't believe it's effective. It's that I don't think it's necessary.
I'm speaking with Carol Markowitz from the New York Post, and this piece is in Newsweek. Carol, you also reference, and I've noticed this throughout a couple of your pieces, that you're keeping a close eye on what they're doing in Europe as far as how they're treating kids and how they're dealing with COVID with children. Can you kind of highlight the differences in how they're handling this versus how we're handling it here in the United States?
So in the U.S., we've largely treated children like disease vectors, which they truly are not. I always highlight a statement by Dr. Anthony Fauci last November saying, we thought kids were major spreaders of this, and they're not. Kids actually have a very low spread of COVID. They don't spread it to adults in most cases, and they don't spread it to each other in most cases. They just don't have a lot of range. And again, this is not some right-wingy conspiracy. This is like Fauci saying this. In Europe, they've accepted this information and they've internalized it and they treat kids accordingly. So in a lot of places in Europe, they never masked kids under 12. While in the U.S., we start at 2. Every video you see of a kid being dragged off an airplane is happening in America because they won't mask on a plane. My family went to Iceland in August and kids do not mask there at all. But more than that, the adults needed to produce a negative COVID test to enter. Kids did not even need a test to get into the country. They did, however, require a test to get back into their own country, back into the U.S. And there's just so much more where I think we've lost the plot where kids are concerned. In Europe, they prioritized opening schools. And, you know, the real thing is that I hate complimenting Europe at the expense of America. I think generally we do everything so much better.
I was just going to say, Carol, I could never picture you doing this up until now, but I understand why.
I'm upside down. Yeah, I used to have kind of a joke about Europe, like the only thing they do better than us is like train stations. Like they always have these like gorgeous, amazing train stations while we have like decrepit Penn Station in New York and like other horrible train stations around the country. But they've really nailed the response to COVID where kids are concerned. They've treated them as if they are important. They've treated them like a priority, and they've adapted to the science that says that the kids are not a risk, neither to themselves nor to other people. And that's just something we are nowhere near doing in America.
Yeah, and one thing I wanted to say, Carol, is that you do reference how a lot of people are losing faith in these organizations, you know, whether it's the CDC or the NIH. But one thing you wrote about that I had never heard of before, and maybe I'm behind the ball here, but you say in July there was a piece by David Zweig. Can you talk a little bit about that piece?
So good. Yeah, it's excellent. So he's one of the best writers on COVID. I really highly recommend following him. His last name is spelled Z-W-E-I-G. He's terrific. He broke down in Wired how the CDC kind of fudged the numbers on myocarditis where kids are concerned, where teenagers are concerned. So this is already with the vaccine 12 and up that's already been available and been given out to kids, you know, across the country. I should say teenagers, not kids, because 12 and up. But what the CDC did to make the risk seem smaller than it is they combined the numbers for girls and boys. Now, boys are 7 times more likely to have an adverse effect from the vaccine, a myocarditis adverse effect. And Zweig breaks down that there's absolutely no reason, and it's never done this way. If one, you know, sex, it has a different outcome of something, they never combine both genders into one thing. It's always like girls are more susceptible to this, boys are more susceptible to this. But because they combine the genders here, it made it seem like myocarditis wasn't that big a problem. And it's not to girls, but it is to boys. And it's a really big problem that the CDC, you know, I say they lied. David Zweig kind of was softer about it. He said, you know, they just finagled the numbers a little bit. And but to me, this is yet another reason not to trust them. They are not telling us the truth. And I think they're a completely politicized agency. I think when the teachers unions rewrote the school opening guidelines on behalf of the CDC, or when Anthony Fauci pushed, you know, the Biden's recovery plan on TV, I think these people and these agencies are completely politicized. They're completely an arm of the Biden administration. And trust is broken. That's what should be the focus right now, on rebuilding the trust between health agencies and the American people.
Carol Markowitz, I actually read a piece of yours yesterday on the show. You wrote about Halloween, and you wrote, it's as if the people in charge sit around thinking, what joy can we strip from the lives of American children today? The joy sucking is bad enough, but getting rid of holidays is also a way to further divide us and limit in our celebrations together. Now, I think a lot of people would say, oh, you know, this is just an over-exaggeration. The right wing is just getting upset about it. But this is happening. I mean, this happened in Melrose near us, and a lot of people called in about it yesterday. Why do you think it's so important to keep the fun, to keep the fun events in these kids' lives?
So, you know, what's funny is that if you and I were speaking like 3 years ago, we likely would not be talking about children's issues. Like, I was not a children's issue writer. I wrote about all kinds of stuff. I wrote about, like, the economy or how people should be having sex more or foreign policy or any number of things. But in the last 2 years, something has crystallized for me, and that's how unimportant children have become in American society. And this Halloween story is just the perfect combination of how unimportant children are and how we could just take away things from them that make them happy and nobody thinks twice about it, but also the emerging wokeness and the equity nonsense that is everywhere right now. The reason that these Halloween celebrations are ostensibly canceled is because not everyone can afford a Halloween costume. So instead of pooling together to get like the one or two kids who can't afford a Halloween costume a costume, they're taking it away from everybody, which I think is a very good illustration of equity. It's not that the people who don't have something will be given more or get more through the equity process. It's that the rest of us, everybody, will get less. And so it's amazing to me that I've become a children's advocate and a children's writer. Like, this was not my path or my role at all. But I think what we're doing is so deeply damaging in this country that I can't stop writing about it. I see two-year-old masks, and it makes me bananas. I don't even have a two-year-old. And I think so much of what we're doing, and, you know, every time they say, oh, kids are resilient, I'm like, but the adults around us are so not resilient. They were once children. Like, this is what happens. Children who are damaged and who have bad stuff happen to them and have all the joy stripped out of their lives grow up to be adults who are not resilient and who have problems adjusting and problems coping with their lives. And so we can't just continue treating kids like some afterthought. They're actually kind of important, it turns out.
The children are the future. That was what I was always told growing up. And now you're right.
Allegedly,
they're just,
right?
Yeah, they're kicked to the side. Carol, I know it's not what you intended for your path, but you do an excellent job at it. And I hope you keep writing about these issues because they're very important. Carol Markowitz can be found on Twitter at Carol, K-A-R-O-L, and follow her and read all of her stuff. She's one of my favorite writers. When we get back, we'll take your calls on all these topics. 844-500-4242. This is The Grace Curley Show.
She's never held office, but she paid the Whiskey Priest's monthly rent once. She's Grace Curley. She's the friend you never knew you needed.
What? Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
Okay, make that best friend. It's Grace Curley.
Merrick Garland is still testifying as the DOJ is caught in a variety of controversies. We'll keep the sound coming on that. And even though the National School Board Association did apologize for that letter, that doesn't mean they're getting any less obnoxious in when they talk to parents at these meetings. You know, there's this real smugness and cutting off of the microphones if anyone says anything out of line. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, today's poll question is brought to you by Ortho Feet. Ortho Feet's unique premium orthotic insoles give your feet the comfort they deserve. So treat your feet to a pair of Ortho Feet shoes. Go to orthofeet.com. That's orthofeet.com. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Well, the next TV interviewer asked Fauci about the Beagles.
No, I think the next TV interviewer will say something like, what's your favorite Halloween movie?
94% now believe no, they will not.
Yeah, I'll have to ask Howie this again when he comes on for the car crossover, because he said yes. I don't know. Howie always seems to fall back on this idea that journalists have some sort of decency where they're like, oh, they have to ask it, don't they? And I don't know if it's because he's been in this longer than me, but I just keep going, no, they don't have to. And they won't. And they haven't in the past. When his emails came out, all Nicole Wallace said was, he's so polite in emails. He signs off so nicely. Rob, you're next with Grace on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Rob.
Grace, how you doing today?
Good. What's going on?
Hey, listen, in Milton, which I'm from, and, you know, they have over 400 teachers or associates in the Milton Teachers Association, which is a branch of the Farm Systems of the Mass Teachers Association. The president, Diane Crowley, last year on a Facebook post said that between 50 and 60% of their memberships are afraid that they are going to get sick. This is not about the kids. This is about the teachers getting sick. Imagine that. If the kids aren't going to say, why do they have these masks? Because they're afraid of getting sick. They're the super spreaders. This is awful, Milton.
But Rob, a lot of these teachers that are afraid of getting sick, and I can think of one example of a teacher who was, you know, demanding that the school stay shut down, and then she was posting from, what was it, vacation in Puerto Rico? So I don't really buy that. And you know, if you can question people's sincerity with religious exemptions, I think you can question how afraid these people actually are. If you have underlying conditions or if you live with someone very, very old, I get it. I do. I have sympathy for that. But these young people who are so afraid and then they take a flight to Florida for spring break, color me skeptical. Adam, very quickly. Go ahead, Adam.
Thanks, Grace. I love your pieces in The Spectator. By the way, I just watched a show called Goliath, the last episode of season 4, and it was all about Big Pharma. And really, Big Pharma is all about the money, period. And if you look at the FDA, why doesn't the FDA do its own independent testing of this stuff? They just accept what the Big Pharma gives them. It's insane.
Yeah, there's a couple of pieces on Netflix that have to do with Big Pharma, and I think there's a new one coming out on Hulu, too, about called Dope Sick. So maybe I will check out some of that stuff. Thank you for the call, sir. When we get back, I have more parents speaking up for their kids, and Josh Hawley is not done investigating the botched withdrawal from Afghanistan.